Our meeting format calls for a guest speaker followed by open discussion. Our guest speaker will speak, share for 30 to 45 minutes before calling on people to share. During the open discussion portion of the meeting, we're asked that you keep your sharing to less than 5 minutes. It looks like we won't have a problem so far. So that as many people as possible can have a chance to participate. It is now my pleasure to introduce Leonard, who is so kindly volunteered to share his story. He has 24 years and a day. His birthday was yesterday, and I just met. So thank you again for coming and speaking to us. And it's all yours.
Thank you, Kathy. My name is Leonard, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm grateful to be able to be in another meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, to have been asked to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. Thank you for your service, Kathy, and for everyone who read, and for Bill for asking me to be here tonight. For any newcomers who may listen to this later on, welcome. When I got here as a newcomer, I didn't know if this was going to work because everything else that I had tried didn't. But one of the things that I tried to do over the years is to try to steer clear of the drunkalog and focus more on recovery. And we all have a drunkalog, but I will tell one story as an example just to qualify. But I started drinking at the age of 13 regularly and signs of alcoholism at the age of 16 when I got my license and had a lot more freedom, had ready access to alcohol through siblings, relatives. So I started drinking early. And one of the early signs was the blackouts. And I had no idea what they were. All I could remember was I didn't remember. I hated to hear the words, "Do you remember what you did last night? Do you remember what what you said?" And I'd always be embarrassed about that. And I kind of try to laugh it off and joke it off. So I was showing early signs of being an alcoholic and I drank absolutely. I drank for the effect. There was just no, social drinking in a sense. I got married early in life after high school. My girlfriend and I, we got married and had a baby right away. I had, no idea what it was, what it meant to be ready to be a father and a husband. I wasn't done drinking. My wife, good woman very, very grateful that she stuck with me throughout this disease. For those of you who are new, I mean, this truly is a disease. It manifests itself. Mine started to show early signs, but the disease itself, at some point, I became, an alcoholic drinker. And so there's, I remember this debate that I would have in my head early in sobriety. Was I born an alcoholic or did I, cross that imaginary line and go from being a cucumber to a pickle, never to be able to go back to being a cucumber again? And I had this debate and it occurred to me, it's like, who cares? It doesn't matter. What matters today is I'm starting to learn that when I drink, it is not good. And I had to learn that drinking itself is not bad. Drinking is not bad for people who are not like me. So social drinking, alcohol is not an evil substance. It's pretty benign and people can use it responsibly. But alcohol in me was a problem because my body reacts differently. I absolutely believe in the disease concept of alcoholism and that when I drink, something happens to me that doesn't happen to most people. And I try to explain it to the newcomers, you know, it's like, you know, you have this allergy. And I love seafood, and I go to the coast, and I enjoy seafood. But, you know, the guy sitting next to me eats a shellfish, and he can go into anaphylactic shock, right? Because his body has an abnormal reaction, an allergic reaction to substances in shellfish that my body doesn't have. And so my body reacts differently to alcohol. And the things that happen to me is I start to crave drinking. And then I have this mental obsession about where I'm going to drink and get the next drink. And by the time people were finished drinking, you know, in functions and things that I would go to, I was just starting. And then I start looking for the after hours thing just to keep running until, you know, till the wheels fell off. And so my wife, you know, she stuck with me through all of the progression of this disease as it continued to manifest and grow, and the symptoms became more and more consistent. But the example I wanted to share was I came home drunk again, and I came to passed out in the vehicle, and it was parked in the driveway, and I was sitting on the passenger side. And at that time, I came out of a blackout, and I was able to remember these events. And then, so I got out of the car, and I went to the side of the door because I wanted to go through the garage door, and I couldn't find my keys, and I said, I must have dropped them. So I picked them up, and I started trying to get the keys in the keyhole, and they wouldn't go in, and I just could not get those keys to go in. And I had been, you know, working on my yard, you know, putting in a backyard sprinkler system. And so there were, you know, pieces of backyard lighting all over the place. So I went around to the front. I rang the doorbell. My wife came. She opened the door. I can remember just standing there having a big grin on my face. And she just kind of looked at me, and she, you know, she looked down, and she was hurt, and she walked up. You know, like, you know, you did it again. This was a pattern. This didn't happen just once in a while. You know, I came to the next day. That's what I remember coming, you know, getting out of in bed, waking up late. And then I started looking around for my keys because it became a ritual going out and looking for where I may have had another accident. And, you know, so I was looking for the keys to the car. And I couldn't find them, and I, you know, reached in the pockets that I had, and I it was weird. I pulled out this, you know, a piece of PVC, cut off PVC pipe and a half inch end cap and a cut off riser that I had was on. And I thought, what the heck are all these? So I called up my brother-in-law because I remember he and I had been drinking, and he said, I had to drive home. So, I just kind of left you there. I walked home. And I said, hey, man, I can't find the keys. And he said, well, I got them. And I said, no, you don't. I had the keys. I was trying to open the door. He goes, no. He says, I've got your keys. I'll bring them to you. So he hung up, and I said, where did I have my keys last night? I knew I had them. Then I remembered I had that stuff in my pocket. Well, it turns out that I was trying to unlock the side garage door with pieces of PVC pipe and an end cap and stuff that I thought were my keys, which weren't my keys. So, you know, I had many episodes of missing the mark, you know, in terms of just not being able to drink like a normal drinker. And so a number of things happened. But anyway, when I got to AA, what I remember feeling when I went into my first meeting was the shame and the guilt, and I felt what I described later on as I became more aware of what was going on inside of me was I felt like a walking dead man. Okay, I felt like a tomb that I could, you know, you can paint a tomb up on the outside, but in the inside there's a dead person. And that's why I was trying to describe it. I remember having these suicidal thoughts and just inclinations of, you know, everyone would be better off if the tire on my vehicle blew out and I smashed up against the concrete pillar and it'd be done with. And so I was having these kinds of feelings and of just wanting to check out. because nothing was working anymore, and I was creating a lot of problems in my life, in my personal life, personal relationships, work relationships, I went to my first AA meeting, and I can remember identifying with what they were talking about in terms of this pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And I remember okay. That's okay. I think some microphone will have to get turned up for something. Okay, is that...
Sorry.
That's okay. There we go. I think that took care of it.
My internet.
Okay. I was identified with emotions and things that people talked about. And I went to a few more meetings, and people were laughing, I thought, at weird things. You know, they were laughing at things that they were sharing that they did. And then I started listening, and I thought, you know, well, I did that. But I'm sure not going to be laughing. And I did not feel like laughing about it. But I didn't even laugh when they were laughing, but I was just thinking, because I was confused, you know. Prior to this, I had been treated for depression. I had gone to the doctor. I'd had, you know, taken antidepressants. I was doing all these other things. Plus, I was drinking, continuing to drink. And I'd asked my doctor about my drinking by asking him about his drinking. And I can remember I said, the old backdoor circumlocution kind of thing. And I said, so, you know, he's poking on my liver. And he goes, so how much are you drinking? I said, well, you know, doc, I have a couple of beers after work. And he goes, oh, okay. I said, hey, doc, I said, do you ever think you drink too much? And he looked at me and he goes, sometimes too much, sometimes not enough. And I said, that's me, doc. I drink just like that. So, you know, if you're not an alcoholic, I know I'm not an alcoholic. So then I was struggling again, and I asked, I was talking to my cousin, and I said, so, and he got hit, gotten sober. And so I said, so what do you think? I was sharing some of the things I'd only select things that I didn't want to be embarrassed about. And I told him, I said, so what do you think, Dave? You think I need to stop drinking? And he looked at me and said, Leonard, if you didn't have to stop drinking, why would you? You know? And then another time I went to an intake that I never followed through on, but I went to just the initial one, and this lady identified as an alcoholic. And she shared a little bit, but then I shared some of the things that I was going through, again, not in great detail and certainly not being honest. But I just shared a little bit, and so I asked her, so what do you think? You think I'm an alcoholic? And she said, well, I don't know if you're an alcoholic. I know I'm an alcoholic, but I don't know if you're an alcoholic. And I said, then I must not be an alcoholic, because she's one, and she said that she's not sure, so I don't think I'm an alcoholic. And so I ended up just trying to find any reason to not be an alcoholic. And the episodes and the things that I was bringing upon myself through this drinking, and I didn't know that I was a sick person. You know, I really didn't know that I was. And I had this feeling of being a bad person. And I remember going to one of my first AA meetings, and I heard a member share. He says, you know, we're not bad people that need to get good. We're sick people that need to get well. And I can remember hearing that, and that rang with me. It's like, okay, I'm not a bad person. So, I mean, and I started listening to what people were saying. And I remember I came into AA, as I mentioned. I quickly started listening for the differences. And so this was my first entry into AA. I started to hear things, and I would say, you know what? I didn't drink like that. I didn't live under a freeway overpass. I didn't live along the oleanders on the freeway. I didn't sit on the curb with a brown paper bag, you know, by my side. And lo and behold, I started drinking. And then I was going to meetings. I think I remember saying, you know, this is stupid. You know, I'm drinking and I'm going to meetings to not drink. You know, one of these has got to go. Of course, I continued with drinking for another 6 months until alcohol brought me back. And it brought me back by way of a treatment program. And I can remember thinking, okay, I'm gonna have to, you know, let my insurance know. I got to go into a treatment program. And, you know, these, you know, they're professionals. And so AA didn't work. So I'm gonna go to a treatment program. So that's probably the answer. So I went to the treatment program and I listened to them you know, they listened. They said, you know, we don't think you should be in an inpatient, you know, probably an outpatient, and let's try that. So they said, okay. I said, so they said, you have to come here 3 days, you know, 3 days a week, and they gave me the rundown. And I signed up all the documents, and they said, oh, and by the way, here's a paper. You're going to need to get 3 meetings in per week. And immediately I was angry because it's like I felt I got duped, and I said, I can't get 6 meetings in, you know, in a week. I'm busy. I've got things. I've got a family. I'm involved in the community, and I'm on committees and blah, blah, blah. And they said, Leonard, you said you would be willing to do whatever it took to get sober when we were talking to you, and you said you would. You remember that? And I said, yeah, I remember that. So they said, so you'll need to get 3 signatures. And I was really, really mad. But they said, look, we're going to teach you here about a little bit about yourself. We're going to have you look at your family and your family history and the dynamics there. We're going to go ahead and talk about the disease of alcoholism. But you're going to get sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful that they said that because they were really upfront about that. And that's true, because if treatment centers work, they'd be cranking out sober people and on, you know, without going to AA. And the reality is that long-term sobriety is found in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for guys like me. Okay? If other people can find other ways, and AA makes no claim to be the only manner by which people get sober, right? So, but it is what worked for me. Okay? And so, so I continued to go to that treatment program, and they had me fill out these questionnaires and things, like, you know, talk, you know, kind of get to understand, you know, my disease. And so they started asking me questions about hiding my drinking, and the guy was reading my answers, and he said, so Leonard, do you hide your drinking? And I said, no, I drank openly. I didn't hide my drinking or anything like that. He says, huh. He said, how about when you said that you would be driving home and you would stop and get 2 beers? Hey, but you would tell your wife that you got 2 beers, but you really got 2 quarts of Schlitz malt liquor, and that's like a 6-pack. He said, that's not hiding your drinking? I said, no, I told her I had 2 beers. And he goes, huh. He said, how about the different routes that you would take home? You know, you said you would go home by way from Fresno to Kingsburg by way of Hanford or by way of Porterville or whatever, and you would drive around and you would drink. He said, but you had those patterns on the way home. He said, so that probably people wouldn't recognize you or whatever. So he said, that's not hiding your drinking? And I said, no, I go different routes because it'd be stupid to go on, I was pretty obstinate. You know, it'd be stupid to go down, you know, the same route every day. I mean, I don't want to see that, you know, I don't think that's hiding my drinking. He goes, huh. He goes, is hiding your drinking, did you ever, How about like when you took your cans and bottles and you would rip them out from under your seat and you pull over on the road in the country and you dump all of those out? And he said you'd unload them. He said, that's not hiding your drinking? And I said, well, no. First of all, it'd be stupid to have any out, you know, got pulled over. That'd be, you know, really dumb. So No, that's really not hiding your drinking. And besides, you know, these poor people were driving around on their bikes and stuff and with empty bags and trying to pick up cans and bottles. And, you know, I'm just throwing them out there so they don't have to drive so, you know, ride so far. And he goes, huh. And then he said, how about, Leonard, when you said you would go out and you had a refrigerator out in the back of behind your property and in the shed and, you know, you'd have alcohol stuff back there and, you know, you'd go work on a project and you'd be drinking back there, you know, by yourself. And he said, that's not hiding your drinking? I said, no, I don't think that's hiding my drinking. And he said, huh. And the more he said, huh, the less sure I was of my answers. And so he said, Leonard, do you have, have you ever been institutionalized? He's reading my answer. He goes, have you ever been institutionalized for alcoholism? And here I was in the treatment program, and I said, no. He goes, what the hell do you think this is? And I had to sit there, and he was pulling my covers, and the denial and the lies I was living and telling myself so that I could not be an alcoholic, and he was exposing my dishonesty, and he was doing it pretty efficiently. And then he said, Leonard, he said, do you have any alcohol in your house right now? And I said, no, I don't have any alcohol. He said, Leonard, think, do you have any alcohol stored in your house anywhere? And I said, no. I said, I don't have any alcohol. He said, think, Leonard, just be quiet for a second and think, do you have any alcohol in your house right now? And I said, no. I've got a case of champagne. I'm not going to drink it. It belongs to a group, and we had a function at the house, and I was going to give it back. So I've got a case of champagne. He goes, huh. He goes, okay, think anything else that you have. And I said, no. I said, wait. I said, you know what? In that refrigerator that I told you about, I said, there's one silver bullet left, and it's sitting in the fridge. I said, yeah, there's a can of beer out there. And he goes, huh. He said, Leonard, he said, did you ever hear the story of Superman? And I said, and he said, okay, so what was it that rendered Superman powerless? And I said, well, it was kryptonite. I knew the answer. Right? So he goes, I said, that's right. He said, now, do you think Superman has a 12-ounce can of kryptonite in his refrigerator in the back of his garage? And I started laughing, and I said, no, I'm sure he doesn't. He goes, that's right, and he's Superman, and you're just Leonard. And so he was exposing the denial of this disease, and I love the acronym DENIAL. Don't even notice I am lying. And that made, you know, to be able to have people pull my covers is extremely uncomfortable. Even today, you know, when I have a sponsor that, you know, say, well, what about this? But, you know, being exposed is uncomfortable and I don't like it, but I need to be exposed, right? And to be quite honest, I don't have to cover up a whole bunch of stuff today like I did before. You know, my one of the guys that I sponsor, he listened to my story last night, and he said, Leonard, he said, you know, he says, I've heard your story again and again, and he said, and it's always consistent. And he said, you know what's cool? You never have to remember the truth. You do have to remember the lies, right? And then another lie to cover up that lie and on and on. But you never have to, you know, remember the truth. It's always going to keep coming out. I went through that treatment program. They got me going, regularly to AA, and I did that. I couldn't wait to get my, I heard in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you want to invest well in your sobriety, get into service right away. So I took a commitment right away. They took a group conscience, and I didn't even have 6 months. I had five, and I wanted a commitment because I did not want to drink anymore. I did not want to go back to that. But I was about 6 weeks sober, and I was sitting in the meeting room there in my home group in Kingsburg, and I was looking at the traditions and the steps on the wall, and I had this kind of like a revelation, a little epiphany, and I it's like, hey dude, you've got 6 weeks continuous sobriety. You could barely string 2 days together when you got here for trying to stay sober on your own. But you've been sober for 6 weeks now, and it hit me that my God is, as I was beginning to understand, my God was revealing to me very slowly, the truth that number one, I realized that my higher power is around the tables of Alcoholics Anonymous and is doing for me what I can't do for myself. I can remember having that thought, and then I remember thinking, I didn't do this. And I shared this with an old timer after the meeting. He says, oh, that's cool. He said, when did your obsession to drink leave? And I had to think, and I thought, I don't know. He says, oh, okay, well, that's good. Probably would have confused you anyway. He said, usually, some people it takes longer, but within the first 6 weeks, mine was gone. That craving, that obsession to keep drinking. And I don't know when I lost it at all, but I do know that it happened sometime in that time frame. And I just kept coming back to those meetings. I was coming back to more and more meetings. I got, like I said, got into service at 5 months. Started, working the steps with the sponsors, was taking their suggestions. So when it came time for me to work my fifth step with my sponsor, they say don't do anything crazy in the first year of sobriety, but I went back to school, and I actually got really immersed in school, and I stayed very, very busy trying to earn my degree. But I kept going to meetings, and it was really tough. There was a lot of work involved. I had that outpatient thing going on, and I didn't think, each week I thought, how am I going to do this? How am I going to get the work done? And by about the fifth week, it was like, why do you keep asking me? I have this thought, like, you're doing it. Just keep doing it. Just keep making progress. So it took me a while to get my fourth step done with my sponsor. And then we sat down, and I shared all of my stuff, and he told me, he says, you can share this with whoever you want. You can find a pastor, you can have me, whatever. He says, AA is real clear about that. You can find whoever you'd like. And I remember thinking, well, in my faith tradition, I've got the confession. I've shared all of this stuff that was on there, and I shared it. But I shared a little bit here, and if it was really bad, I went behind the curtain so they couldn't know who I was. Or I'd go to a different church and go to a different priest to confess. And I thought, you know what? I've done that. And I want to share everything. And so I wanted to be with my sponsor, another alcoholic. And so I chose to do that. I chose to share that with my sponsor. He left it freely up to me to do whatever I wanted to, and we sat down and we went through it. And then came the time for me to, and like I said, it took me a long time. So it was about a year and a half by the time I did my fifth step with my sponsor. And then, six and seven were pretty fast. And then it came time to make, the list and the amends. So I had gotten a phone call just about the time I was going to work my fifth step. And I got a phone call from someone in the community who said, we want you to run for office in the community. And I said yes. And then I realized, wait a second, I just said yes. I'm already involved in getting running for office. And I'm starting to do my amends and working my ninth step. This may not go very well if it ever got into the papers that all of these things that I'm now going to people in my past and sharing ever got out. And so all these, you know, fears came in, and that thought came, you said you were going to do whatever it took to get sober. What's more important, getting elected and maybe losing the election because someone found out something, or, getting sober, staying sober? So I said, you know what, I've got to do this. So I went to one of the amends I had to make in town, in the little town where I grew up in Kingsburg, was when I was in high school, I stole stuff from an employer, and he had hired me to work at his grocery store, and I drove up to the store, and he was coming out, and as I was just coming in, and I said, hey, I said, Bill, I said, how are you doing? He goes, oh, how are you doing? He said, I need to talk to you. He goes, okay. He said, can you talk right here? And no one was around. I said, yeah, I can talk right here. I said, look, I said, Billy, I said, I stole a lot of stuff from you, and this is what I think I owe you, and with some interest, this is what I think I need to pay you back. And I said, because it was wrong, and, you know, I apologize. And he said, really? I said, yeah. He said, I need you to accept this, and I apologize. And he said, wow. He said, well, he says, you can pay me back. He says, what I want you to do is I want you to take that money, and I want you to do something nice for your wife and kids. And I said, no, Billy, I said, I really do need to do this. It's something that is important for me. And he said, you'll pay me back. He says, I want you to take that money, and I want you to do something nice for your family. And I said, wow. I said, you sure? He goes, yeah. He says, you know what's funny? I said, what? He goes, you remember Chuck? Now, Chuck was much older than me. He was my oldest sibling. He was about their age. But he had a lot of hard miles on him, and he was an alcoholic. And we would time our breaks when I was, you know, there at 18 years old, and we'd jump in my car, and we'd shoot over to the liquor store. He'd jump off. He'd get his half pint. I'd get my half pint. You know, I cracked the seal. He cracked the seal, and I started drinking mine. And I looked at him, and all I saw were these. His Adam's apple was going up and down. I saw like three big bubbles go, plump, 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 and it was gone. And I thought, wow, I wish I could drink like Chuck. And he turned and he looked at me with all seriousness. And he looked at me, he goes, you know, the liver, it's like a muscle. You got to keep exercising it. And so, so he goes, you remember Chuck? I said, yeah, I remember Chuck. He says, you know, funny thing, he came in here about 2 weeks before you and did the same thing. And so it turned out, I found out that Chuck did get sober. Thank God, his wife went through a lot with him. And I was so glad to hear that he got sober and moved on. He actually moved up to Oregon or Washington, but and is sober to this day. And, so I needed to do those things to get sober and to not, it doesn't say that it's, you know, when we make this like a fearless moral inventory, it doesn't say it's fear-free moral inventory or fear is not going to creep in, but fear is not going to dominate, you know, the decisions that I'm making. I'm starting to learn how to live with some faith in a higher power. Faith that my higher power is going to handle things. My sponsor had he had a sponsor, and his sponsor told him, you know, he was whining to him. He said he was whining to him one day, and his sponsor said, oh, I'm sorry. And he, you know, he kept talking, oh, I'm sorry. And he my sponsor was a hothead. He's talking, he says, for the third time, he goes, I'm sorry. And he could tell he was being sarcastic. He goes, what the hell are you sorry about? And he says, I'm sorry you don't have a higher power that's big enough to handle that for you. So, you know, I'm starting to learn how to live with some of that faith. And I take this into my life. I start making my amends. I made an amends to a boss who couldn't stand me, tried to get me fired, long story there. I won't go into it, but when I made my amends to him, he just listened and he was kind of surprised. He just kind of got glassy eyed, and I thought he wasn't paying attention, but he went somewhere else. And he just said, after I was finished, he says, my dad was hard with me. And he started like, okay, that was kind of awkward. And it was a silence. I said, okay. So we left, and then our relationship started to get better. And I left that job after making my amends to him. I left it about a year later. And I decided to go into becoming a teacher. And I saw him at a function my very first year, and I went up to him, and this guy that hated me and I hated him truly, and all this immaturity that I had and these immature emotions and decisions and ways to try to get one over on him or get back at him, and I walked up to him and I said, Ray, I said, you were a good boss. You tried to teach me a lot. You held me accountable for getting to work on time, because I couldn't get to work on time to save my life when I was drinking. So, but he said, he listened to me. He says, you know what? He says, we grew together. And he walked up and he gave me a big hug. He had tears in his eyes. And I can remember thinking, wow, thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I had to make those kinds of amends and try to start cleaning up my side of the street, not making, expecting people to take responsibility for anything they may have done. It was nothing. I couldn't go that route. I learned I had to clean up my side of the street. My life today is so much better than anything I could have planned. And I truly, truly mean that. You hear that, but I sincerely mean that. I have had some really cool spiritual experiences. And one of the things that I remember, I ran for that public office. I left the town that I lived in Kingsburg. I moved up to Fresno. I ran for school board up here in Central Unified, and I was elected, and I served a term there, got into public service. I learned a lot, from my first go-round in Kingsburg, and I brought that along. But I got elected to a really contentious board, and it was like being on a board with a bunch of kids, and they were just fighting, and they, because I was neutral and had come in, both sides voted me to be the board president second year that I was on. And I got us to start talking about letting me help them do a unity of purpose statement. And we did that. And we hammered it out. And by the time, the second month we got it taken care of. People in the meeting room, there were a lot of people there, but they all started applauding because they were tired of seeing adults act like, kids, and they applauded that. But if you look at that, inside that unity of purpose statement is language that's plagiarized right out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was able to bring those principles and talk about, having a primary purpose and all of the values and things that were important for us to be able to be in service. And so I credit Alcoholics Anonymous and everything that was, taught to me over the years. And, I want to also, mention that another spiritual experience I had was, my grandson, and I love being a grandfather. I love being a grandpa. I cannot tell you how much I love being a grandpa. And our grandson was born, and I didn't really feel a whole bunch until I walked in the room and my wife was holding him, and she hands me this little bologna loaf and she says, here he is. And she put him in my arms and it was over. I had a lightning bolt of joy. And I was trying to tell my godmother later what that was, what I was feeling, and she stopped me. She said, mijo, she said, and I stopped and she says, God has reserved a love God has a love that he's reserved only for grandparents. And I knew she knew what I was talking about. And so, you know, he couldn't do anything wrong. I mean, I was just enamored with this little guy. And then fast forward 2 years later, and he's learning the word no, okay? And he's also got the terrible twos, and he hadn't done anything really up to that point. And he was starting to whack the flat screen TV. It was kind of on the low stand. It was kind of moving back and forth. And he, you know, him and I said, no. And he looked at me. He turned around. He sat down. His heart broke. He threw himself backward. He started screaming and crying and kicking. And then he got up. He sat up and he looked at me. No tears whatsoever. He threw himself back down, just kicking and screaming and crying. And I was watching him and I was thinking, wow, look at him. How cute is that? He's trying to get his way. And I remembered that had that happened with my kids, I would have, you know, been a lot less patient. Like, hey, you know, knock it off. I'll give you something to cry about kind of thing. And I watched him, and I was thinking, had these thoughts. Look how cute he is. I'm not going to let him, you know, whack the screen. He's learning something new. He's trying to get his way, but he can't because I don't want him to get hurt. So, well, he doesn't get to slap the screen. But look how cute he is. And he's just carrying on. And I had this thought also, it came, it's like, you know, he could do anything, and I'm going to love him. There's nothing he could do ever that will stop me from loving him. And I thought that thought, and this little voice inside said, that's how I have loved you. And my 2-year-old grandson, you know, gave me an insight in how an imperfect grandpa could be communicated with by a perfect creator to be able to have that kind of an insight, you know. And other things, you know, the spiritual realm, if you're new, the spiritual realm, don't let it scare you. It's real. And, you know, my sponsor died about 2 years ago. Loved that man. And he got cancer, and he was sick. And before he died, a couple of months before he died, I was very angry, and I was writing out composing a text to him. I was very angry because my daughter was having some trouble. She's living with us for a couple of years with our grandson. And she was doing things that that were bothering me, and I thought were selfish, and I was hurting for my grandson, and I was angry. So I was texting my sponsor. Now my sponsor, you know, in the throes of the cancer and the sickness and the chemo, he had slowed down, and he couldn't sleep at night, and sometimes he would just stay up and he would pray, and he'd tell me, he'd say, Leonard, I heard that Javier has cancer. Tell him when you see him that I'm praying for him. And he would sit up at night and he would pray. He'd send me some texts of prayers that he had, things he had composed. And so here I was. He's at home and I'm sitting at work and I'm texting this angry text to him. And I get this text from him. And the text reads, all you have to do is tell your daughter that you love her and that you're glad that she lives with you. And I looked at that and I thought, what the heck? And I called him up. I said, hey, Tom, I said, I'm just composing it. I checked to you. I'm pretty ticked off. You know, he goes, I know, Leonard. He said, I intuited that you needed to hear that. And I thought, wow. You know, my higher power and loves me like a proud grandpa. And I want to be able to continue to try to work this program and carry this message and let any of you who are listening know that we don't have to live in all of the anger and the resentment and the self-imposed, you know, pain and all of that kind of thing. There's a way out of this disease. There is hope for a different life. A life that may not be what you think you want, but it'll be way better once you realize when you get there that you couldn't have planned it any better. So I'm grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm grateful for the opportunity to, you know, share part, a little part of my story. And I want to thank all of you for allowing me to do so today. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Leonard, for sharing. I apologize, my internet's unstable and it keeps coming in and out. So if that happens again, we'll let our higher power run the program, okay? You should be anyway. So thank you very much. Let's see. Now we're starting the discussion part of the meeting. We would like to hear from as many people as possible. So this is an open discussion. I will now turn the meeting back over to our chairperson to pick speakers. So it's up to you if you want to call on somebody or does somebody want to, do you want to pick a topic, Leonard?
No, you know what, I'd like to leave it open for whoever, whatever anyone would like to talk about. So, Mike, are you there? Would you like to share? I see your name on screen.
Twice.
Is Mike there?
He's there somewhere. We'll give him a minute. He's recording where he was.
Okay. You know what, let's go with Delilah then.
Here's Mike.
Oh, is Mike?
Yeah, lots of time.
Hi, I'm Mike Alcoholic. Thanks, Leonard, for sharing with us. I really appreciate everything you had to share. I'm just grateful to be sober. I got sober second day of January 1986, and I was scamming when I came in here. You know, the people I drank with after my last drunk on New Year's Eve 1985, you know, I went over their house New Year's Day, and they just shook their head like this, put their head down, shook their head, and said, "Mike, you don't want to know what you did." And my wife at the time said the same thing, basically, and the next day, on the second day of January, she wrote me a note, and it was the central office's phone number. And she said, "Call these people." And she'd gone off to work. And I called them. And I was scamming. I was going to learn what I was doing wrong. You know, I didn't think I had a problem drinking. My biggest deal was I worked 3 in the afternoon till 11 at night. So when I got home at night, everybody at my house was asleep. And the last 2 years of my drinking, I didn't drink with my drinking buddies. I worked with a bunch of guys at a printing place, and we used to drink and shoot pool and drink and play cards and stuff like that different nights of the week. And I couldn't do that anymore the last couple years of my drinking. And the reason was is I would have to share, and I couldn't share anymore. You know, I just couldn't share with people anymore. I needed to drink by myself. And looking at it now, or looking at it after I'd been sober a couple years, really, I realized how lonely that life was, you know, but I wasn't lonely at the time. You know, I was doing what I thought was right. You know, I didn't think I had a problem drinking. I really didn't think I had a problem drinking. I had a party at my house on my last drunk, because people wouldn't invite me to parties. My drinking buddies showed up, and we ended up over somebody else's house they had a hot tub, and I went over their house on the first day of January to get my own jeans because I went home with somebody else's jeans. And like I said, they just shook their head and said, "Mike, you don't want to know what you did." And I still don't know. They never shared that with me, and that's just okay. You know, I know it was bad enough to get me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I called the central office, and I was one of those people that got 12-step. And the guy they sent out to me took me to a meeting. My first meeting was at Pine Recovery. They had noon meetings at Pine Recovery. You know, and I could only go to noon meetings during the week because I worked 3 in the afternoon till 11 at night. And during that meeting, there was this guy with very boisterous voice, kept talking about God will do this and God can do that and God could and would. And as I was leaving that meeting, I said to myself sarcastically, God, what have I got myself into? And I say sarcastically, but I really meant it. You know, what have I got myself into? And this guy, you know what? My higher power that I choose to call God today, I didn't have a God when I got here. You know, I didn't have a higher power. I just didn't have a God. You know, the kind of God that I had was punishing. You know, anything bad that ever happened to me, God did it to me. You know, it wasn't me. It wasn't me or my drinking. It was God doing it to me. And I was grateful what he did to me. You know, he didn't hear me say it out loud, but God heard it. My higher power that I choose to call God today heard it. And he put his hand on my shoulder and said, I want to introduce you to some people. And he took me down to the Alano Club and introduced me to about five people. And they were all friendly. And they were welcoming. And, you know, they said, it's nice to meet you. And keep coming back. And those were things that I wasn't used to hearing. I really wasn't used to hearing because of my drinking, at the end of my drinking. And there was one little old lady, you know, I share it a lot, and I'll never forget it. This little old lady, she was about this tall. I said something to her. I don't remember what it was, and she didn't remember what it was. She has passed on now. She had been years sober at the time, in 86. But what she said back to me was, that's okay, honey, we understand. And I didn't get it at the time, but there was something that made me, I don't know, it hit me. There's something that hit me. And instead of just taking off and telling this guy, oh, I don't want anything to do with this AA stuff, because I was going to spend about 90 days, you know, going to this A&A place and learning what I was doing wrong and learn how to drink like a gentleman. And I wanted to keep coming back. I wanted what these people had, you know, and I kept going to meetings and I didn't share anything. I was so bent when I got here, up here. I didn't get a 30-day or 60-day chip because I sat in the back and listened and watched. And I saw that people got chips, you know, 30-day, 60-day, 90-day chips, got called on during the meeting. And I was absolutely convinced that if I got called on and I shared that was what was going on up here came out of my mouth, I would be asked to leave and not come back. I didn't know that we don't do that. We don't do that. What we do is we welcome people even more, you know. You know, begged for them to keep coming back. It took me till I was about 90 days sober till I got a chip and started sharing. And, you know, I've just been so grateful for my sobriety over the years. A lot of things have happened. It hasn't been all, you know, rainbows and everything. You know, I've been divorced twice and married twice with one close call since I've been sober. And those were the times that I weren't working steps. And my significant other wasn't working steps. And I just keep coming back. You know, I got into service. One of the things that they talked about was get into service. And I did get into service. I started taking meetings when I was about 7 months sober into that Pine recovery. You know, we take meetings. And it got me to meet people. It got me to get out of myself and ask people if they would come and share. And it made me want to keep coming back. It made me want to stay sober is what it is, you know. And I've wanted to stay sober no matter what, you know, has happened over the years. And I got to share something. It's going to sound crazy as hell because it scared me half to death. Last week I woke up one day and one of the first things I thought was, It was before I said any prayers or anything. I thought, I don't need AA, I can drink. And I've been 35 and a half years sober, you know, and it's like, that scared me to death. You know, I started praying, and I kept praying, took the dogs out for a walk, and the first thing I did was go to a meeting. You know, I needed a meeting because I need you guys, you know, and I need, I didn't have a higher power that I choose to call God. Truthfully, the first 6 or 7 months of my sobriety, the group was my higher power. You know, I wanted what these people had. I wanted them, they were happy, and they were laughing with each other, not at each other. And, you know, people were just laughing at me when I got here, you know, at the stupid things I did. And, you know, I can laugh at the stupid things I do now, but I don't have to worry about anybody else doing that. And I'm just so grateful to be sober. I can't express how much I'm grateful for. You know, I one of the things I do is H&I work. And I've been going to the jails and stuff, but I've also been going to the prisons for a number of years. I got meetings started going out to Corcoran Prison. And it was funny. I dressed up in a suit and tie, a shirt and tie, and met with the warden and started my spiel. And he just kind of stopped me and laughed and said, "That's okay. We know who you are. We know what you're here. We've just been waiting for you," because he had been at other prisons and stuff, you know. And we got the meeting started within a couple of years, and I've been really grateful for that. You know, my life has changed a lot. I became a school teacher after about 10 years of sobriety. I decided I wanted, you know, I printed yearbooks. That's what I did for a living. And I decided I wanted to do something with these kids. And I actually became a school teacher for 15 years. And it was a continuation school. Kids that were just like me when I was in high school, you know. And I understood those kids. I didn't get all pissed off at them for their actions and stuff like that. Sometimes I get frustrated, but I just love them, you know, and did the best I could to help them graduate high school, you know. And I retired a couple years ago, and I'm just so grateful for my sobriety. I'm grateful for all the things I've been through, you know, the good and the bad. Because when the bad things happen, I get hold of my sponsor, I get into the book, you know, I get in with a group, and I share my experience, strength, and hope. And things have been a lot better, you know, and I'm just grateful to be sober. And Leonard, thank you so much for sharing with us tonight. I can't thank you enough. And one of the things, my ex-wife, who just passed away last year with 33 years sobriety. She passed away sober. We got in business together. And I want to share with you, two Geminis and two alcoholics have no business being in business together. we were taping. We were doing taping. You know, because because I work nights, I listen to a lot of tapes when I got sober. And I started, when the guy that was doing the taping here in Visalia got old and stopped doing it, I started doing it. And I got into it. I felt kind of weird about selling the tapes, but my sponsor told me if people want them bad enough, they'll buy the tapes, and I did. And, you know, I quit doing that a number of years ago. When I went back, when I went to college, you know, I stopped doing that and sold the business and stuff. And, I don't know, it's about 4 years ago, I started a website of free MP3s. You can play MP3s on any device, on a computer, on a phone, on anything else. And I got, I got about 1,000 different speakers on there. And this speaker tonight is going to be on the Valley Group. We asked if Leonard, Bill asked you if it was okay to record you. And I'm grateful for all the people that that share their experience, strength, and hope for people. You know, and if people want to download the MP3s and listen to them later, they can. And if they want to listen to them at the time, they can. And I'm grateful to be able to do that. I'm grateful that I have the sobriety to be able to do that. Thanks for letting me be here. You know, thanks for this Sunday night. It's been kind of a lonely weekend. My wife went up to San Francisco. Her daughter had a baby 2 years ago. Baby just turned two. He's in his terrible twos. But she doesn't care. She spends as much time as she can up there with the baby. And that's okay. I can't go up there too much because I have our three dogs that I have to take care of. And that's okay. You know, it's just okay. And I'm grateful to be sober. I'm grateful for all these meetings, and I'm grateful for the Sunday night meeting. And thanks, Leonard, for sharing, and thanks for letting me be sober again. You know, I went to, on Sundays, we have a live meeting at Blaine Park here in Visalia, an outside meeting. And it's really nice. It's the only outside meeting I go to. The rest of the meetings are Zoom meetings like these. And I'm just grateful to be sober and grateful to be able to go to those that one live meeting a week. And I don't know. I'm just grateful for everything. Thanks for letting me share. Thanks for calling on me. I'm just grateful to be sober.
Thanks, Mike. We have a... Was Delilah on? She...
I think she left us.
Okay. we have another...
I don't know who's ever on the iPhone. I don't know who's on the iPhone. Do you want to talk? No, but I'm Kathy. I'm an alcoholic, and happy 4th of July. And Mike, we really appreciate you too, and thank you for recording. And I hope I didn't mess it up with my. What happened was I was trying to get onto another device because my Wi-Fi threw me off. And I thought, well, I'm supposed to be secretarying, so I got on, open another device, my phone, and that noise. I hope that doesn't mess up the video. I mean, the recording. Going to be okay? There's so much that you shared that, you know, when I hear it, oh, yeah, I can relate. Yes, yes. Well, I don't remember, I should say, but it stuck this time was the denial. Don't even know I was lying. Wow, isn't that so true? You know, that lie is so true for me. I didn't know I was lying, you know, because, I mean, I lied to myself. I believed all my own stuff, so why would I know that was just about my alcoholism, that is. And, you know, I drank for a long, long time. I'm just now, you know, coming up on 3 years, so, and I'm not a young spring chicken. But, you know, I knew that I was an alcoholic for several years, for a long time before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I first found it when I was 30, and I got almost a year of sobriety. For all the sobriety. And then I went out for another 30 years.
You froze up, Kathy.
Yeah, I think it's just you and me, Mike. Kelly, I don't know if you can hear us or not, but you're frozen up.
Nope, she's gone now.
Okay, well, Mike, do you end your meetings with vision for you, or how do you normally do that?
A lot of times we have a reading, but I don't know if any reading anybody's been asked to read. Probably not tonight. Usually what we do is have a reading and then just have the reader do a prayer, and then we close it up. And it looks like since there's nobody wants to talk on the iPhone, it looks like we're about done. I've shared all I can. And Leonard, thank you so much for sharing tonight.
Oh, thank you for asking. I do have the vision for you, if you'd like me to go ahead and read that. There's Kathy.
There's Kathy.
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I never had this much trouble with my internet. It's the fireworks. I'm going to blame it on them. So I guess we're coming to an end here, right? But I do want to say, if you lose me again, we can just go.
We lost you again.
Yeah. Okay, Mike, you want me to go ahead and read that, or is that all right?
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and...
All right. This is Vision for You, page 164, in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah.
And last two paragraphs. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past, give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, Leonard. You want to give us a prayer?
Yeah, let's go ahead and close with the third step prayer. You're okay with that? Okay.
God,
I offer myself to thee, to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them, and witness to those I would help us by thy power, thy love, and thy will. May I do thy will always.
Thanks again, Leonard.
I'm sorry, Mike. My internet.
No worries.
You're okay. A lot. I didn't get.
You're okay.
Okay. Did anybody? I guess we're good, right?
Yeah. We're good.
Thank you for sharing that, Mike. I didn't know that. You know, I didn't know that about you. That you're a teacher, and I've never heard you share that before. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I remember your ex-wife, and...
Carolyn was a great lady.
Yeah, I remember, you guys were good friends, and I know that's because of the program, right? You probably got along better. Yeah, because of that. That's awesome. So,
problem was we were in business together, and that was a mistake. Two Geminis and two alcoholics have no business being in business together.
That's funny.
You have a birthday coming up too, huh? Are you, Mike?
Me? My birthday's the second day of January every year.
You're a Gemini?
No, I'm a Gemini. My belly button birthday's June 9th. I just had my belly button birthday.
So you had a birthday recently, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, happy birthday to all of us today.
Happy 4th of July.
Take care.
Bye-bye. The building's going off in my neighborhood already.
Mine same too. Here. My dog is sleeping through this. Bang, bang, bang. I have the one and only dog that is so secure. she keeps me calm.
All right. Good night.